Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses of Seizures. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. And in the studio today, just to back up a little bit here. I know we just started, but we're just going to back up a little bit. Just launched my fall menu yesterday at my bar, Grand Army, and got me thinking a lot about this fall is my favorite season for the transitionary like time of year and the ingredients. I like a lot of spice, and fall is always my favorite time for food and drinks, especially. So I thought it was probably a pretty good idea to talk with my buddy Brennan Adams in the studio today about some tequila, because it's one of those spirits that you can actually it goes on different levels as far as like age and the flavors that are imparted by going from Blanco up to Añejo. So yeah, I think it's a pretty good day to talk about tequila. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more.
Well, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Heck yeah, man.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, so I guess let's just start there, man. I mean, like, well, first of all, how's your fall going?
fall's wonderful.
You're wearing a hoodie.
Wearing a hoodie. I do love hoodie weather.
It's hoodie weather.
It is hoodie weather. It's this way I can walk into a bodega with my hood up and
rob the place.
Hey, I'm not going to say that. You never self-incriminate.
Especially when it's going to be archived.
Exactly. For the ages.
But yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, I couldn't agree with you more. The thing about tequila, especially agave spirits in general, I think traditionally we always see these things as spring, summer, occasion. And really when, if they're done really well, you have this huge spectrum of flavor and taste and with all the natural spices and fruit notes, it goes unbelievably well with what we consider traditional fall cuisines, and that sort of slightly heavier, spicier, more developed, complex foods.
And then
playing it to cocktails, it's anytime we can take the place of we see all this evolution in cocktails, and going away from the cognacs into the whiskeys into as far as the classics, and then the innovative kitchen style cocktails and that sort of thing, and it's nice to see agave on the rise.
It is. I mean, especially like you're talking about like the differences, like Phil Ward, I think it's one time when he was on the show, or maybe it wasn't when he's on the show. Maybe we're just talking one day. But yeah,
Ward talk?
Yeah, I mean, he'll talk a lot if you get him going, especially about tequila and agave spirits, I was just like, so why tequila, man? And he was like, dude, you can do like everything with it. For instance, He also like talks about like playing Mr. Potato Head with classic cocktails.
Sure.
And there's no better spirit than the different types of tequilas as far as age, because you can really swap them out and a lot of times make a much better cocktail with them.
Yeah.
Much deeper, for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. The thing is, I mean, here's the absolutely amazing thing about tequila and agave in general. From one single phenotype, the blue Weber agave, we have hundreds of different expressions. From the, if you take a Highland agave, you'll have, you have several hundred expressions, even if they're all done the same way.
Sure.
And the only variance will be the yeast, altitude, the way they age, and even filtration. Those are very simple things that lend you just amazing variety from just one phenotype of one plant.
It's crazy.
It's incredible versatility.
So tell me
and
about
variety.
Yeah, totally. Tell me about how this company Santara got started.
Yeah, so Santara basically, you know, the whole idea behind Santara is wanted to enter the tequila market. One, because it's on the rise, but it's also a category that's endangered. Mm-hmm. You know, with the massive rise of tequila, the demand in the United States. And a lot of the old traditional growing practices in Mexico with agave, sort of the demand has outstripped production capability in some areas. And so couple that with monoculturing, pests and blights and that sort of thing, you find, you know, peaks and valleys.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that there's, like, some of that has to do with, like, I mean, I know that, like, in the... like in the late 90s, there was a huge drought, and there's like agave wasn't.
There was a blight, yeah.
Yeah, it was. It kind of, in a way, like in a lot of ways, it, you know, since there wasn't as much tequila going around, the price went up, and then there was almost like this sense of exclusivity.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, because it's the same way with like American whiskeys too. It's like where, you know, like everyone wants a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle, but because there's nothing. There's nothing there. Well, but like 5 years ago.
We can talk about made-up markets later. I mean, it's kind of like the De Beers thing with diamonds.
Yeah.
You know, diamonds have inherently no actual value. They don't. They're just... Literally, it's pencil graphite under pressure.
Sure.
You know?
I think it's interesting, though, like, especially... Yeah. Well, I mean, like you were saying with this you've basically created this tequila that's just built on the highest quality, but there's just not a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah. So basically our shtick is this. We wanted to show that you can make tequila very simply. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that's responsible on the front end, dealing with the front end responsible growth and harvest issue, rolling harvests, paying the farmers up front. So that, you know, so you encourage them to not monoculture, and to treat their properties in a responsible way. But that also helps to, when you grow healthier plants, then you have healthier soils as well. Mm-hmm. Our message is really, if you deal with the front end sustainability issue, and make tequila very simply, you can come out with an incredible product. We just want to do it on a very small scale. You know, we're doing it on a very small scale. By design, it's not craft, it's not artisanal, it's not handmade, it's none of these, ubiquitous marketing terms. It's literally just good, simply made tequila, just in small format, you know?
I like that. I think that's great. I mean, like, you know, we were talking about this before the show, and I was like telling you about like my farm in Oklahoma and how I wanted to like basically make a whiskey on the farm, which, you know, we're going to talk more about that.
Oh, yeah,
the
show. Absolutely.
But,
absolutely.
But, you know, the way that I grew up with farming, there wasn't like all these like herbicides and pesticides and all this stuff. You went out and you picked weeds out of the field.
Yep.
To like let the plants grow.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, but, absolutely.
So then, like, as I got older, I started hearing all these like, buzzwords like, you know, like, organic, biodynamic, they're real things, but like artisanal, handmade, like all these things, they get thrown around a little bit.
Yeah, I understand why these things exist. I mean, you have to engage the consumer's mind, right? Mm-hmm. How do you engage the average consumer and just get them to create willingness to try your product, right? And so largely, you know,
just
that's
put cocaine in it, like. Like they did back in the day. It's easy.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
well,
come on.
Yeah. The first one's
free. It's marketing 101.
First one's free. You know? But, you know, it's not like we don't do that now. So, you know, sans cocaine, but, you know, the first one's free. Tell all your friends.
Sure. You know? Sure. Well, I mean, that's it. But the way you're talking about it, it's different. I mean, like, because obviously we have... Nowadays, like, it's much different than it used to be because, like, of course, like yourself, as a brand ambassador, you're out there and your job is to put the product in people's hands and, like, get them familiarized with it. And it's you're not like shooting blind, you know? You're not just like putting in a store and like, you know. So I think it's, I don't know. To me, like I've done a lot of brand work in the days that, you know, in the years that I've been doing this. And like, I think really just being honest about a product and putting it in people's hands and just giving them the facts is absolutely the most important thing. And, you know, it's kind of, and also like, I'm just going to sidetrack a little bit because I like the packaging of this bottle. Because I used to be a graphic designer.
Design
and I like,
geek.
Yeah, I'm going to geek out on design a little bit. Both me and my twin brother, like he works for Wired. He's the art director for Wired Magazine.
Okay, so cool.
He still does it. I got bored and started drinking and getting into cocktails. But I really like the fact that it's a very clean package, and it like I guess kind of like we're talking about with the whole like mission statement with the juice itself. It's like also I love the fact that this is just nerdy on my end, but I like the fact that it's the bottle's actually screen printed and not a sticker.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I hate wasteful like paper.
Yeah. Stuff. It's we try to minimize as much as possible with this. It's a good solid bottle. You know, and it fits in the rail. It's heavy. It's well made. The seams are down the corners. Mm-hmm. It's minimalist, but and I actually think that it plays into the idea of modern Mexico. You know, and it sort of pays homage to the traditional styles of architecture and design. But the clean shoulders and sort of blocky design of the bottle, I think, plays well into the sort of modernist aspect.
Yeah, it's really cool. You said it fits in the rail. Do you want it to be in the rail?
You know, the thing is, so so much of the setups now, you know, with bars is, the rail setup is no longer in a lot of the high end cocktail bars, as you know. Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, it's not relegated to all the cheap,
it's not like,
it's cheap spirits anymore.
It's
literally set up to your cocktail list.
Sure.
You know, and
absolutely.
So, yeah, absolutely. I want it in the rail if you're using it in a cocktail list.
I think that, yeah, well, totally. No,
actually,
that's,
personally, you can put it anywhere you want as long as you buy it.
Well, that is, at the end of the day, yeah. That's the thing.
I mean, come on. It's the idea of having a bottle on the back bar and just leaving it there.
Like, yeah.
Bottles don't sell because they're sitting on a back bar.
That is true. I think that's an interesting point.
They don't sell because they're sitting on a back bar. Packaging is good for retail. Because the consumer walks in and you want it to catch their eye. And so, you know, there's this whole metric about where to place it in stores and things like that. But, you know,
if the bottle's too wide, it's going to get turned sideways and you're not even going to see it.
Exactly. Like,
mentality of that.
You know, and you know, when we're talking about the on-premise and bars and restaurants, you know, I'm more concerned about whether or not the staff is buying in. You know?
Sure.
I want the staff to buy it.
Well, because they're the ones who are ultimately your silent sales people.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And sure, yeah, you want the visibility, but if my bottle is going to live in the rail, then so be it.
Yeah.
If it's in the rail, then I hope that hopefully that means that
it's moving.
It's moving.
Well, I mean, of course, usually if you have one in the rail, there's one on the back bar, too, for display. I mean, that's how I always roll.
I would hope so.
But I mean, like, I can't fit, like, a bottle of Benedictine in there.
See, everyone should take a class from Damon.
Well, yeah, come on. Also, I hate pour spouts behind the bar. So, yeah. I like anything that I'm using. Like, I want to have the back bar clean with the corks and caps on them.
Yeah, sure.
But I think it's interesting you say that because, like, yeah, we are. You've been bartending for a very long time too.
Yeah.
Now that you're working as a brand ambassador for this company. But yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, talking about the mentality of the well and then the back bar.
Right.
You know, that is, it really, like, I guess we haven't really talked too much about that on the show until, like, right now, but it really is interesting to see, like, if you walk into my bar, there's, like, bottles of chartreuse.
Yep.
And, you know, like, there's some expensive shit back there.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that you're pulling, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, it's about, you know, it's, The nice thing is that, you know, when we saw that transition, you know, from sort of like the steakhouse bars and sling and fling to sort of the beginning of the kitchen, you know, the kitchen style cocktail programs. And even then, you saw a lot of prep work going into the mixers and syrups and fresh juices started coming out. But the rail setups pretty much stayed the same. You know,
yeah.
You know, because they had that, you had to offer, right? And that, of course, they were still the things you were pouring the most. But now, you know, it's now it's about, you know, now that we've brought hospitality back into the top end, you know, tier of cocktails, you know, it's about efficiency, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, not only, you know, not only are we teaching our staffs now to work with, you know, how to set their cockpit up.
Yeah.
You know, so that it works in, you know, in fashion. And when you're busy, you can do it blindly. It's, you know, it's just training and it's about now, of course, you know, when you really see the ones who are trained well, it's when you start moving the bottles around.
Yeah. Yeah. You start grouping and, you know, for your menu. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, you go to like go to Dead Rabbit and look at all the cheater bottles they have. You know, that's an insane setup. And it, I think it's amazing. I love where we've gone where we're going with the cheater setups.
Oh, dude, me too.
I do. I love it. I think, it's visually appealing.
Oh, yeah.
And two, it's just like, I just love that puzzle.
Absolutely. You dude, know? Yeah. I just, like I said, I changed my menu over yesterday and like just remapping everything. It's like... I love it.
Yeah,
like it's really fun. It's like, yeah. Like I said, it's like a game almost.
Yeah, it is.
But it's also like like you said, it's visually like, I think like anytime I go to a bar that like has their setup, like their mise en place like on top of the bar, like I'm like, all right, well, they thought enough to like actually like make this efficient for themselves and for the customers. Like then they must have thought enough about their like cocktail menus and the way they're putting everything.
Yeah, definitely.
So like it is the mark of like a place that's actually doing.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Stuff. Yeah, but, absolutely.
But I also just like tiny bottles.
Yeah,
you know
I do
what
too.
I mean?
Well, you know, I mean, after years of slinging around, you know, full size, you know, liter bottles, and you end up with the old man syndromes. You know,
oh yeah,
carpal tunnel and
bad.
Shoulder starts to hurt, and you get this weird, you know, weird stitch just on the right side of your back.
I slammed two of my fingers in the bathroom door at the Up and Up the other night. I still haven't recovered. It's been like a week and a half.
That's just from being drunk.
Just from being old, being old and drunk. And so the tiny bottles really help out.
Yeah, I agree. I love that, and hopefully, you know, I think we're working on trying to get these into a smaller format. But same shape.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to be amazing.
I think we should try some.
I think we should definitely try some.
We normally take a break halfway through this show, but I think we're just going to boogie.
Yeah, you want to... We tried the
Blanco
before.
Yeah,
we tried the Blanco earlier.
I mean...
We can go to the rest.
It was Let's with the on. Staff of Roberta's and some other friends. Yeah, so I love Reposado.
Yeah.
I have tried this Añejo. But mm-hmm. I would like to revisit it.
Yeah, sure.
But Reposado is like definitely like it tends to be like my favorite category. Like
yeah.
My favorite age.
You know, the thing about Reposado is just to give you a quick background on Santara. So Santara, basically, what we do is we take high Brix level agave, and so we're going for much older plants. Mm-hmm. We roast them traditionally for about 54, 56 hours or so. Put it into Molino, so shred. All the dry pulp goes to animal feed. Everything else goes into ferment. It's inoculated with proprietary fruit yeast. But then it's an open-top fermentation. So we're still allowing some of that to go, you know, by chance.
Uh-huh.
With amazing consistency. And then after distillation twice in lambex, it goes, you know, the Blanco goes straight, gets cut with water and put in the bottle, and then the Reposado's direct contact in American oak barrels that have been used once and recoopered.
Oh, okay.
So we bring it back up to a 3-char.
Okay.
And then scratch it.
Cool.
Okay, so it's a bourbon style aging. Salute.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so you get direct contact 6-7 months on this. And so you're going to see, like, in the bottles, you'll see variation in color. Because we don't care about the color. There's no color or flavor manipulation in this.
Right. That's
it's
great.
It's all whole fruit. And then the Añejo we'll move on to that one. That one's special.
That one is very cool.
Yeah, that one's special. That one is, so that one's actually, it's not just a straight Añejo, though, to be totally transparent. The first batch of Santara tequila that was made, using a little bit of foresight, I think, we put 1,200 liters into 2 barrels.
Okay.
And let them sit for about 3.5 years. So 20% of that is actually the extra Añejo.
Cool, man.
Yeah, so it's 80-20. So 16, 17 months, and then the rest of it's
three
like,
and a half. You walked into that like, just to be transparent, it's not actually new. I thought you were going to be like, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like, actually, yeah. It's kind of like a super Neo, basically.
It's kind of better than... It's kind
you
of...
tricked me.
I did.
Well played. So, when you were a bartender, you bartended for quite some time, right?
Yeah. I started...
You were in D.C. for a while?
I was in D.C. for a long time. Let's see.
Hanging out with Adam Birnbach?
I love Adam.
Yeah, he's great.
Dude, that kid is so talented.
Yeah.
So talented. And from the design side... Yeah, that kid's ridiculously talented.
Yeah,
I was with Adam and Derek Brown and all those guys, and I came out of the design field and got burnt out, and then got back behind the stick. That was 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And a top end restaurant group in DC sort of took a chance on me. One, because I'm a Steelers fan. And seriously, it was like the general manager of the place, massive Steelers fan, and no one else was. And he was like, "You're hired." It's like, okay. So yeah, I worked at 10 Penn, which is now closed, at 10th and Pennsylvania. So right across the street from the FBI building and DOJ and IRS, and right in the smack of the federal district. And then, after. Like 4 or 5 months or so, they let me take the helm of their flagship DC Coast, and I moved that place out of its pre-mixers and everything else into more of a kitchen-based program, because I wanted to tie in more with the culinary side. And I was like, well, if these guys are doing all these wonderful locavore things and sourcing, then why aren't we?
Yeah.
You know,
DC has a great bar scene.
Well, and this was back in 2005.
Yeah.
At this point, so this is. You know, and everyone likes to think of D.C. as like 5 or 6 years behind New York. And I say false. Absolutely effing false.
I mean, like...
That's... Yeah.
It's one of my favorite places. I had not gone to... And I consider myself extremely patriotic.
Well, you're from Oklahoma, man.
Yeah.
You don't have any choice.
I'm in the middle of it. And, but I had never been to Washington, D.C. I didn't, like, go on a class field trip when I was in high school or anything like that, you know. But I first got to go to D.C. about, 2 years ago. It was very recent.
Okay.
And I've been back, like, 5 times. Yeah. I just love it there.
It's an amazing town. One, the town itself is amazing. But two, for what we do, the F&B side is ridiculous. There's so many talented people there. And, you know, and what I really love about it is there's this great core of innovators who and mentors for everyone else, you know, in the city who've stayed there.
It's, you know? Yeah. You really feel that too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really tight community, and, you know, and the stalwarts like Dwayne Silvestri and Adam Birnbach and Owen Thompson and Derek Brown and Tom Brown and
like J.P. Featherstone.
And Featherstone, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, you have all these characters who they're there, they're D.C., and they want to do the best job possible, but also teach.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing. That, and it's just such a tight, loving community.
Yeah.
It's so supportive. I love the town.
Yeah,
you know, and you know I live here in Brooklyn now, but... I miss the grass too.
Yeah,
there's a lot of grass there and trees and stuff.
It's a lot more than here for sure. Agave, was that like something you were working with a lot when you were bartending?
So when I left Passion Food Hospitality, I ended up I had a consulting group and consulted on a few places, but then I got picked up by Modern Mexican, Richard Sandoval, and opened up El Centro, the first El Centro there, and took over Zengo, and so, you know, I wanted to build the largest tequila inventory in the Mid-Atlantic.
Wow.
Outside of New York.
Yeah.
I understand geographically New York is in the Mid-Atlantic, but...
Yeah. It's its own thing.
Yeah, it's a yeah.
New just York take City. It, take New York out.
Yeah, Metro New York is its.
Give
it's,
everyone else a chance.
Exactly. You know. I've always been. I would always qualify myself as a beer and whiskey guy. Even though, you know, it's one of my great mentors is a wine guy, and I worked for Rogue Ales for a year. And,
oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I love whiskey, but what I really love about agave is just its incredible versatility.
Yeah.
And it's the and, you know, like we mentioned earlier, it's, you know, from one phenotype of one fruit, mm-hmm. we get this incredible variety of juice, you know, and it's just insane to me. And it works beautifully in cocktails. You know, it's, you know, and so I fell in love with it very early on. And did I ever think it was going to become like my thing? No. But then again, I mean, I'm 41 years old and still looking for my path, you know? Yeah. I mean.
I think it's cool. I like it when stuff like that happens. So.
Yeah.
Because when something finds you rather than you finding it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's almost like when you have like a friend that you can't remember how you met.
Yeah.
You've just been friends and it just happened.
I think that's 95% of my Facebook page.
We met at Tails. No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
Don't remember that at all. So we got the Añejo now, yeah. Man.
Oh, yeah. So the big vanilla bomb.
Yeah.
And this guy is, and you know, when you think about cocktails with this, I want you to immediately think the old fashioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's makes a beautiful old fashioned with demerara sugar, sugar cube, and then I use a bitter cube Bolivar bitters is how I spec it out. But yeah, it's, I mean, you can do it any way you want to, but this makes a beautiful old fashioned.
This is great. I'm a big fan of this one.
Mm-hmm. And I am as well. It's again because my love of whiskey, and this is a very whiskey upfront presence,
mm-hmm.
and then it just. It sort of just fills your mouth with the agave pepperiness at the back end. And one thing I think you'll find is, you know, notice the body on it changes. And there's no flavor manipulation on any of this. But because the vanillins are so much more present, it's, you know, convincing our brains that it's just so much sweeter.
Yeah.
And it's not at all.
Dude, I really like this. I feel guilty a lot of times when we taste on the show because people are listening and they're like, what? But I guess you just have to go out and find it, man.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they can get all the information they need on the website.
Yeah, on the website.
Which is?
You know, where, yeah, so the website is SanterraTequila.com. But, yeah, I mean, we just launched. Our official launch was September 28th, so last week.
Yeah, you guys are babies.
Yeah, yeah, total babies. And we have very small inventory, but, you know, it's you can find us at several great places like Drexler's, Forest Point, Basic, American Whiskey.
Grand Army.
Grand Army. Hudson Barn Books.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and the grounds, the support. The support in the New York community has been pretty stellar.
Yeah, I mean,
it's good juice, man.
It's great stuff. I mean, it's not juice. Surprising at all to me. Yeah, dude, thanks for bringing this stuff in.
No, thank you. Thank you for bringing me in, letting me, pitch it out, you know?
Man.
It's exciting. It's, you know.
I have a lot of people come on the show and, like, bring in stuff. Like, nice stuff for me and the Heritage Radio staff to sip on during and after the show, sometimes before.
Right.
But, I'm really excited for you guys. This is awesome. Like I said, you know, this is, like, time of year where I find, like you said, you know, tequila definitely has such a big, like, wide spectrum of flavors and uses, and I think... it was a really good idea to have you on the show today to talk about this stuff.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
You have to come back sometime, man.
Anytime.
All right. Brandon.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, take care, man. All right, that's it for the Speakeasy. We'll see you next week. Go out and find Santerra Tequila and share it with me because I like it. All right. That's it. Bye. It's going to get you some.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.